Hi everyone. Welcome to another episode of Day to Day Dives Deeper. My name is Alexis, your host of this podcast, as well as your favorite podcast, Talk Tech with Day to Dave. I am here today with my dear friend Day to Dave, as always, and we have a special guest, Ms. Karen Lopez, here to join us to talk about a lot of really fun things, of course, Karen's story and maybe a little bit of AI. So really excited. Before we get started, I always like to remind our listeners to submit questions to Data Dave by emailing us at talktech@d3clarity.com or by reaching out to us on the D3 Clarity website. If you would be interested in joining us for one of these Data Dave Dives Deeper episodes, you can reach out to us at that very same email. Morning, Dave. How are you today?
I'm very well, Alexis. How are you? I hope everything's going
I'm
well.
excited. Yes, I'm
Excellent.
pumped. I'm pumped to talk to Karen today. We met Karen at DGIQ, and I saw her presentation title was Data Ethics and Responsible AI. And I was like, oh my gosh, we should have a podcast about that. So, Karen, hi.
Absolutely.
Hi, nice to meet you. I'm so happy to be here. I'm finally cooling off here a bit in Toronto, and I'm happy to talk anything data. Dave and I chatted for quite a bit. We probably chatted way much longer than we thought because we both love talking about data.
Yes. So, Karen, you're a data evangelist. What does that mean?
It means that I have my own company. So I have a wealth of titles, and I have sort of landed on that one, which is typically what I do and what I work on. And also, the title I'm kind of known by is Data Chick because that's my handle on most social media accounts. And that
Excellent.
has a long story behind it. It was a derogatory term used for women on a team during the Reagan years, because now I've aged dated myself.
Okay.
Because we didn't have names. We were just one of the data chick. Like having a name like Karen and Lopez means if you didn't join on the first day, you can't grab your own name as the title that you can use in a lot of places. So I just
Yep.
landed on data chick. And over the years, I love it because it kind of reflects a little bit of the snark in my life, a little bit of we work on serious things sometimes, but we also need levity. And so it kind
Yes.
of works out really well.
No, excellent. Excellent. So yes, I'm one of the founders of D3 Clarity, so I'm lucky enough to have my own name, and then Alexis comes along and changes it anyway.
Yeah, that's really the story of how Dave became Data Dave. My partner in crime, our marketing person, and I were like, let's start a podcast. Let's call it Tech with Data Dave. And then I forced Dave to become Data Dave and took over his social media where I was like, everyone will know that he is Data Dave. That's my goal.
It's a great name. It's a great brand. If my name started with D, I'd probably be Data Diva or whatever.
Yes. You're the founder of your own company, right? It's just you and your cats. Is that what you said?
Yeah, it's me and my cats. So, founder company. At times, I've had employees or contractors that work with me on large projects. But as I get closer to retirement, I like not having to manage people. But as a project manager, I love it. What I hate is the whole employee management thing. It's just not in me. So I hate telling people, yes, you can take this day off, or no, you can't, and those sort of things. But I love helping teams of people reach their goals. I don't know what PMP says about project management, but that's how I feel about project management.
I agree. I resemble all those remarks. So we formed the D3 Clarity, and I managed to not actually manage any people directly. I would rather lead than manage, so I don't manage.
Yeah, I'm going to steal that line. I'd rather be than managed, so that's good.
And even when I was at IBM, I tended to do exactly that. When I had a big organization at IBM, I tended to lead rather than manage and then get other people to do the management.
Perfect.
We could definitely have a long conversation about leadership
So now,
versus
perfect.
management, but I don't want to go there. If we want to go there some other time, we definitely can. But
Yes.
Karen, we love to start these podcasts with your story. How did you get into data?
Okay, so I tell people all the time, because usually this gets asked on a panel or something, that I'm the oddball out because I actually started being in data as a child. So I tell people I was born this way. I was born to be a data chick. My mom has photos of me as a toddler. Like I can't read, but I used to love and sit with the phone book and pretend to read it. And so not only did I like data, I had this affinity to what is structured data, because anything that was in a table, a form, I used to pick up forms, you know, back before we had a lot of computers, there were a lot more forms that had to be filled out. And I would sit with my mom and ask her, what does this mean? What is this? And she's a retired teacher, so she was tired at the end of the day from teaching, but she would sometimes explain to me what these data things are. And so I went to university and I chose an information systems degree at Purdue. It was one of the early ones that had database systems. Again, we're talking early 80s, database systems in the curriculum. And I knew I was hooked once I started working with, it was pre-relational systems, and relational systems were new and definitely new at the university. So I've just never looked back. My whole career has been data, information engineering, even all the way through.
So I'm going to ask a quick sidebar question, because I got into databases early as well. So what is the difference between pre-SQL and NoSQL?
So pre-SQL is what I call, so SQL in the industry is typically used to mean relational database, just because that's the language, the query language that's used to query them. So I call the databases that existed before relational databases pre-SQL. So I'm drawing pre-SQL, SQL, and NoSQL. So NoSQL was created first by a group of people who were dissatisfied with relational databases. And so they called it NoSQL, and even a lot of their logos and stuff had a big red circle with a line through SQL. And eventually they learned to change it to not only SQL is how that term, but a lot of people still use it with the no word meaning no. One of the interesting stories after all this is a lot of NoSQL database systems, which I love learning them. They're designed usually for very specific use cases. And one of the early stories is enterprises just weren't adopting them. And the main reason was all their developers, all their database administrators, their security people were having to learn brand new systems, brand new languages. It wasn't really until the NoSQL, I'll say vendors, but many of them came as open source projects, so open source managers, added SQL query languages on top of the non-relational underneath. And that allowed enterprises, which now we're talking numbers of users, to get the data out of or put data in these newer databases using the languages and a lot of the tools that they were used to using. And it wasn't until that happened, adding that relational-like language on top, did it really take off, I think.
The reason I ask that question is because I'm always fascinated with people's answers, because I started working with databases long before there was SQL as well. So I was writing bespoke APIs and network databases and various other things to access data in different structured forms. And then the NoSQL people suddenly came up, and then we loved SQL, right? Because it was a structured standard query language that we could use against any number of databases. And it while you've got your flavors and it's limited.
That what then SQL stands for? Standard query language or structured query language?
Structured query language.
Okay. I was wondering that the entire time. Sorry, Dave, didn't mean to interrupt you.
And most and of us forget the meanings of the letters.
That's right.
All the time.
And then the NoSQL people came up and said, okay, no, we want you to access it using our bespoke API, and we don't want to put a query language on it. We don't want to put a standard query language on it. We just want you to use our API. And suddenly I'm taken back to doing exactly the same thing as I was doing in the early 80s and saying, okay. And then they started putting a query language on it as well. And I was kind of, okay, so now we've just gone completely full circle. So we had a database that had a basic proprietary API. We added a structured query language so we could query it easily. Then we decided that wasn't good enough, so we went back to a proprietary API, and then we put a query language on top of that again.
Yes. The other thing that has come in, a big bunch of old people talking, I mean, experienced people talking with each other about the good old days. The other thing that I think is hilarious is that, you know, when I first started taking these courses, it was all command line, like DOS prompt, like typing out letters, like messaging with your database as your program. That's all it was. And then eventually we got applications that allowed us to interact with our tools and our databases and the apps that end users use had a GUI interface, a graphical with buttons and dropdowns and all that stuff. And it made it easier for people with no typing syntax skills to work with data. And that lasted decades. And now all the cool kids refuse to use a graphical interface, or even data scientists and advanced analytics people all are typing either in a notebook, which is kind of a combination of a GUI, but still you talk to your data and structure your data by typing in words, and you have to know the correct syntax. And now we're in this kind of split where I get why we want coding to work with data. That's so we can automate things. So for sure, and automation needs code, but it's hilarious that people make fun of me that I still fire up an application to help manage a database or a set of files. Like, you can just do that from the command line. I'm like, I'm old. I don't want to type all this stuff. I can't remember the exact syntax. I'm lazy.
I'm the same way, and I'll have a GUI and a command line at the same time pointing at the same database, because sometimes one's quicker, sometimes the other's quicker, and I just use whatever makes sense.
Yeah.
Does GUI stand for something, or is it just a word that means a graphical way to connect with
graphical user interface? And oh, by the way, I've also dated myself, because the new term to use is UX, that stands for user experience, or UI for user interface.
Okay.
But the old term is GUI, spelt G-U-I.
Yeah. And graphic most of us like
user.
Say,
graphical user interface.
And it's fun to say. That's why I still say it.
That's right. Exactly. It's fun to say. It just brings this connotation to the mind.
Oh, yeah. It sounds a lot more fun than user experience or UX. I'm like, what?
Let's just talk about data for a minute, right? So what's your perspective on data? What is data, Carol? What do you consider data?
I have a super wide definition. I'm not going to give a dictionary definition because I can find those as like I'm on an interview now, is that anything that we collect and use to help make decisions, and I don't care if it's video or sound or emojis, or for the experienced people, what were those things before emojis? Wingdings or something like that, that was a font? Right. Or emojis.
And emoticons.
I don't care. Like, what's that?
Emoticons.
Oh, emoticons
as well.
Yeah, yeah. So any of those like could be data, like even texture, how something feels. Data sonification, which is something I got to work on a NASA project, is where you turn data into sound to see if you can hear differences in data that you might not be able to see in the raw data or see as a visualization. And that's used a lot as well.
I've got a very simple definition that I use. Data is simply evidence of history. It's the evidence of an event. So it can be stored any way. So you can have any kind of evidence, but data is simply the evidence of an event. And it's the fact that you have evidence of history that makes up data. You can store it as sound, you can store it as pixels, you can store it as words, you can store it as anything. The data is simply the fact that you have evidence of history.
Interesting. A great way of looking at it. I hadn't thought about events, but yeah, I guess my name exists because my parents gave it to me, and that's the event.
So it becomes that evidence of history that is that stream of events that led to something. The reason I use it that way is because it falls into the scientific method, because then you start saying that the scientific method is a whole bunch of observation of history, an observation of events, and then compiling those events into a prediction. Mathematics is now the language of prediction.
I have a friend who believes all predictions are bogus. So I don't agree with him, but I agree with what you're saying. Yeah.
So I agree with him to a little bit, because mathematics is built on an imprecise model, right? Because all it is a model, a mathematical model that takes the history and allows me to predict another event. So if I drop something on the floor, I can predict exactly when it's going to hit the floor, right? That is using a Newtonian model of mathematics and a Newtonian model of physics to predict an approximation, because the model isn't precise, an approximation that is close enough for 99% of what we do as to when that object is going to hit the floor.
9.8 meters per second squared.
Yeah. Right.
That's the one I remember from physics. Yeah.
So that's kind of the model that I use. And then that leads us into sort of AI, because if I collect all this data, myriads of data, which is all history, and then what is AI really trying to do is it's trying to use that history to predict an outcome or to say something is good or something is bad.
So I don't think all data is for predictions. Like some of our teammates refer to my obsession with data as, but some data is really boring. My chart of accounts with all my accounts that, I mean, as a business person, I do use it predictively, analytically. Right. My bookkeepers and accountants, they're 100% focused on filing my taxes.
Oh.
Like they're using that, the historical data in order to pay my taxes. But they, this is the first thing I learned about most bookkeepers and accountants I've worked with, is they don't care that I want to use the data to help manage my business or anything.
No, I agree with that. You don't always use data for prediction. I'm not saying all data is always used for prediction.
Got it.
I'm saying that data is collected and it can be used for prediction in some instances when you want to. Scientific type data, because I use accounting type data, right? Because we all do forecasts and we all do various things. And part of the forecast is look at the history to decide whether I can use my history to forecast. Mm-hmm. I did so many hours of work last month, therefore I'm probably going to do that or slightly less this month because I worked too hard last month. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, there's a bit of human factors that people forget in predictions.
Right. That's the thinking there. And so we get into, and you bring up a really interesting point, which is you said that your accountants and people collect data for your accountants so you can pay your taxes, and they're not doing any prediction. They are simply using it a reflection of history to make sure something happens in and of itself, which is pay the right tax amount. What is interesting in that is then we get people who say, this data was collected in order to pay my taxes, but now I want to use it to predict what I'm going to do. And then they say, now the data is at fault because it's dirty or not correct or not good enough. So what's your thoughts on that? Because you've changed the purpose of the data. You collected it for one purpose for which it was great.
Yep.
But now you've changed its purpose to something else for which it isn't so great, and you're blaming the data.
Absolutely. We see this all the time. And this kind of ties in both data literacy and data ethics. So I've had many a discussion on project. You're trying to use data to... So I'll go back to... I like to talk about one of my clients a lot because not only are they gone, the whole industry is gone. The whole industry only lasted about 12 years too. So I'll let people think for a minute. But anyway, this industry had customers that they had to collect much more personally identifiable information, or PII, because it was a rental business. So rental businesses have to know much more about you, your credit history, a lot more contact information than most retailers need to know. But a lot of people, I know this is shocking, might lie to a retailer when they collect that information, like what's your zip code? And retailers are collecting zip codes because they're trying to establish where their customers are coming from, but they don't realize that there are people out there who's like, no, I prefer not to give this, but their cashiers, their people at checkout are motivated or punished by how many zip codes they collect in the US. And therefore the cashiers won't push back. They'll enter the store zip code or their own zip code, or the White House zip code, or 90210. Here in Canada, we have postal codes. So a lot of people give H0H0H0, which is actually Santa Claus's postal code, because the North Pole's in Canada. What happens is that, yes, it was collected originally to just try to get a feel for, you know, how many customers walk to the store, because especially postal codes are almost building level compared to the US, where zip codes are much broader, whole city sometimes, or whether they came from afar. It really kills them in the US when I get asked this. I'm like, I don't have a zip code. And I get this big eye roll. And I'm like, I don't have a zip code. I have a postal code. Well, let's try it. Can you put letters in there? Well, let's see. No. Okay, I need your zip code. And I'm like, sorry, don't have one. One cashier asked me, are you in prison? And I'm like, no, prisons have zip codes and I wouldn't be out shopping. So, but it was collected for that. But then someone sees that we have a zip code or a postal code tied to every transaction, mm-hmm. and they want to use this, what everyone in the business knows is a very low quality piece of data.
Yep.
Because we incentivize the people collecting it to always collect. There's no verification and people lie. And so then they want to use it for something that's much more business critical, like go figure out the demographics of their customers based on zip codes, which you can do if you have any quality to that.
If you've got quality in your data. My famous story on that is actually Mickey Mouse. Yeah. When you're asked an email address, everybody gives Mickey Mouse.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Or drop downs for a state, a lot of people pick, I don't know, is Alabama the first one? Because it's the first drop thing in a drop down. Is that
yes,
people don't realize that drop down you or your data, whether you intended it to or not.
My other favorite one, having worked in healthcare, data in healthcare, is that the most common malady when people go to the hospital or the doctor is broken bone.
So they'll be seen first?
No, it's just because it's the top one on the list. So when the registrar is entering, so you've got a list of 1,000 and the first HIPAA categorized malady is broken bone.
There you go. And it could also be skewed. Like I was raised without healthcare. Kids in the family weren't covered by our parents' insurance because they were government workers. And so we really only went to the doctor if it was something serious.
Yep.
Like if you broke your toe, they didn't take you to the doctor because one, they don't really broken toes. And two, if all it resulted in was a bill and a recommendation to take aspirin at the time, then there was no point in going to the doctor. Yep. So I always wondered if visits to doctors were influenced much more based on the socioeconomical, basis
absolutely.
Of their local population.
Dave, Karen, this has been fantastic. I love everything you guys are saying. I'm super happy that we got to talk about this and maybe we can keep having this conversation in the future. But thank you again for joining us today, Karen. It has been an awesome time.
Yes, thank you.
I've had a blast. Thank you.
If you have a question for Data Dave, reach out to us via email at talktech@day3clarity.com. We'll be happy to answer your questions in the podcast. Thanks. This podcast has been brought to you by D3 Clarity. No one has time or patience to fix all of their data and infrastructure problems. D3 Clarity helps some of the world's most recognizable brands take the right action to turn their information into strategic profit-making. For more information, go to D3 Clarity. That's the letter D, the number 3, the word clarity.com.